Pneumonia and influenza mortality have been low, but 136 influenza-associated deaths in children have been reported in the U.S., so this number is higher for the same time period than this year. Hospitalizations and 20,000 diseases deaths from flu in the United States. Antiviral medications are important adjunct to flu vaccine and the control of influenza. And thankfully, more than 99% of all influenza viruses tested this season are susceptible to the 4 FDA-approved influenza antiviral medications recommended for use in the U.S. this season. I have some other little stories about details about the coronavirus, but this would be a perfect opportunity to pause for a moment and ask people if they have any particular questions. I can't answer questions that are personal about yourself, but in general, if you keep them general, I would be more than happy to try my best.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
Is the coronavirus, is it a man-made virus? Did it come out of a lab or facility in China? Go ahead.
There are people who are suggesting that on the Internet. There are a lot of strange suggestions on the Internet. A coronavirus is a class of viruses which are very common in a number of wild animals, bats particularly. Carry coronaviruses. They're not been studied that much in the past because the medical science kind of focuses on pathogens for humans, and up until about 2002, coronaviruses stayed among animals. But every so often, animal viruses can genetically drift and become able to infect human beings. The first one was the SARS back in 2002-2003, and these wild animals have other various corona type viruses, and they drift and morph over time, and this is a case of a cousin variant of the SARS and MERS corona type viruses that jumped from some wild animal in China, most likely, and has spread all over the place. So, no, I do not think that this is a man-made virus. This is very much a nature-made virus. This is what viruses tend to, unfortunately, do over the long haul.
Yeah, I heard from some person talking about lab tests on animals, and there was a series of animals that were given the virus. They all died, and the other control, which they didn't give the virus to, they sold them to market for food.
WB2GXM.
Rich, recognized. I just want to answer that. I think that's highly unlikely. One of the other stories that I will give you tonight, if I have the time, reports that actually animals don't die that frequently from coronavirus. The most efficient virus does not kill its victim. It lives off its victim. It uses its victim as a vector to infect others and goes about its merry way. A less efficient a virus kills its victim. So I don't think if you injected this coronavirus into most animals, you would get much more than a slight cold. In point of fact, the story that I'll tell you later on is about a dog that probably got an infection from a human being and wasn't very clinically apparent and didn't even test terribly positive for it. So I would tend to not believe that story.
Thank you, Dr. Roy. KG2RY.
You're welcome, David. Rich, GXM, you wanted to say something.
But just a comment, Roy, and forgive me if I'm repeating what you just said, but it's to be emphasized in this panic-stricken world, and I believe way over panic-stricken world, that the corona as a name applies to viruses that have been around over two decades or more. And what we're dealing with now is simply a mutation, one variant of mutations that happen every single year. This one just happens to be so new that there isn't enough immunity to it yet to make it a normal, quote-unquote, progression in the scheme of things. It's not a zombie thing. It's a mutation of a virus. And it's not, the coronavirus is not the name. Forgive me for being a little bit emphatic, WB2GX up.
Problem, Rich. Feel free to be emphatic. Coronavirus is a very general term for a broad class of viruses that are mostly seen in the animal kingdom, as I mentioned. And it has a very unscientific reason for being called the coronavirus. If you take a look at them under electron microscopes, they look like a spiked ball, much like a corona looks like. And so they named the group coronaviruses. There's nothing inherently dangerous about the term coronavirus. The problem is in how it mutates. Now, again, if it was an intelligent life form, it would not pick this way to mutate. It would pick its way to mutate so that it gained entry to human beings rather facilely, and its infectious rate was 100%. But if it wanted to maximize its own reproduction, it would have a zero mortality rate. It would just jump from person to person to person, and no one will care one way or the other. So none of this is kind of done under any kind of conscious control. It's just that a little DNA molecules get a little confused, and the base triplet pairing gets distorted, and all of a sudden you get a virus that used to not be able to gain entry into a human cell that somehow figured a way of doing it. And so we have to, we have to deal with this. Like I said before, what I would like to hopefully leave everyone with, if I possibly can, is the concept that it's not a good idea to err on either end of the spectrum. Don't think that it's all just a conspiracy. Don't think that it's just a scam and a grift. It's a serious thing, but it is not the end of the world. Most of us will survive. The mortality rate is not great, but again, every person who dies from an illness is a human death, so you have to value that as well. So, drive your car in the middle of the road. Don't whack yourself either on the right-hand side of the road or the left-hand side of the road is my driving directions for tonight. Any other questions or comments? Like I said, I do have a few more little stories on the coronavirus, but that was kind of the big one. Warren, AC2KY, did I answer the questions that you were thinking of, or if not, please ask them.
AC2KY, no, thank you, Dr. Roy. I just wanted you to weigh in on it, and it sounds like a good voice of reason.
Well, thank you, Warren. I try as best I can. I think that we get farther places with constructive information and awareness than we do with fear and intrepidation and just confusion. There's a lot of confusion out there. I've heard it on cable news, and unfortunately, occasionally, I've heard it when I listen to local repeaters, where people are trading back factoids. And I understand that they have concern, and it's not like there's a physician who's sitting watch on every repeater and communication channel to correct everything. And I'm sure there are people out there who sort of think that I'm in league with some pharmaceutical company and it's all a scam. So you can't calm everyone, but I hope at least the people walking away from tonight's little impromptu pseudo-technical net will feel a little bit more comfortable with what's going on around them.
We get another comment.
Well, thank you.
WS2N. Yes, Paul.
Here's a question that I came across, but I don't know if it's true. It came out about JamaicaHospital.org. They said the virus, all viruses, will stay on a solid surface a lot longer than it would stay on, let's say, a piece of cloth, a handkerchief, or somebody's sleeve. I know they're not alive, but the effectiveness of the virus is, you know, it stays a long time on a solid surface. And it's opposite for bacteria. Bacteria likes a softer surface. So that's number one. But they don't really state how long it would last. So I wonder if that's true. Also, cooler surfaces, they like the cooler surfaces, which tells me that maybe that warmer surfaces would be better. Back to you, Ron.
Okay, the problem, unfortunately, is that these are all based on generalization, which is the best that we have. We have almost no experience with this virus. There are things that have been generalized and directed towards this virus which may or may not be true. Very often people will tell you that in April the weather will get warmer and the virus isn't infectious during warm weather and it will fade away. Well, in the case of influenza, that's true. Influenza, though, if you want to go back to the worst story of influenza, Spanish flu back in 1918, the first attack killed many people, and then the spring and summer came and it disappeared. Unfortunately, it came back in the fall and killed more people than it did the first time. So the seasonality isn't inherent in all viruses. It depends upon the virus. There are cases of COVID-19 that are going on in Australia, which is having a summer season. So that's a concern when you look at those numbers. So it really depends upon the particular virus, particular bacteria. You can make generalizations, and generally that's good, but specifics are not necessarily follow for everything. It depends upon what kind of a solid surface it is. If it has something like silver in it, silver is a bacteriostatic, and these things would die. For the most part, viruses tend to not be able to persist for long periods of time outside of living organisms. They're kind of broken partial cells. They can barely do anything by themselves. They basically have to burrow into a cell in order to reproduce and other things. They don't even qualify actually as life the way that we sort of know life. But I've heard anywhere from 5 minutes life expectancy of a virus outside of the body to 9 days. Guess your number type of thing. So I wouldn't rely on those things. They're interesting generalizations, but I would not be surprised if the facts are a little bit different than the generalizations are.
Okay, good information. Yeah, I was thinking of the solid surfaces. You know, countertops, door handles, handrails, baskets, and you know, shopping baskets, that type of thing. All right, very good. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, I think I heard someone out in the distance call comment. If anyone had a comment, please feel free.
No, just pointing out one more thing about the media. The media love this stuff because it's paying their wages. Every single news article has a bunch of stuff to do with the coronavirus. And they love this stuff. If there was all good news, these people wouldn't be making any money. Keep that in mind when you listen to the news nowadays. WB2GXM.
Well, Rich, again, I agree with you in principle. The job of the media is to have you stay with the media. So they have their own vested interest in, you know, when the weather is changeable, and there's any chance of the snow, you know, they'll mention it. They'll do it on TV a lot of times because they want you to stay tuned. So this is an inherent trait in media. They're always looking for the next news item and promoting it and promoting themselves. But again, you got to see the forest for the trees. That this is actually based on a serious problem. You know, if you start to look at the map from about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and it just lit up in the Wuhan province of China, and that was it. You could easily make a case for what am I worried about? But every week, more and more things light up, and you have me telling you stories about coronaviruses that probably annoy some people. When you have something that has a certain degree of infectiousness and a certain degree of mortality, and you have an open global society where a lot of people shuffle all over the world, I mean, thinking, again, go back to the old Spanish flu. There wasn't the mass transportation and the global economy that we have now, and yet that influenza went around the world. So I agree with you that they tend to yell about the sky falling, and I'm not saying that the sky is falling, but I'm saying maybe a couple of the tiles in the sky have fallen. So, you know, again, the middle of the road. You know, call me wishy-washy, but I believe in driving in the middle of the road with this thing.
Well, I won't call you wishy-washy, but one final comment, and I will be silent on this issue for the evening. It turns out that my cousin told me that a family ancestor has passed away from one of these bouts of viruses in the distant past. So I voiced my opinions, but a little softer. AC2GS, this is WB2GXO.
Hey, Rich. If you're alluding to influenza, influenza is unfortunately an incredibly common cause of death among the elderly. When I had some experience in nursing homes, the winter months were like demons howling through the hallways. One person would catch influenza, the entire floor would catch influenza, half the floor would then go on to develop severe pneumonia, and then they were removed to the hospital, never to be seen again, and filled up with a new bunch of mildly ill elderly people until the next winter. So influenza, last year influenza killed over 80,000 people in the United States. It's a serious problem, but again, we've learned to live with it and accept it. But, you know, it has a 0.1% mortality rate. Supposedly, if you want to believe the World Health Organization, they're pinning COVID-19 at 3.4. I think they're overdoing it with that, but time will tell whether they're accurate, and I'm just making stuff up in my head.
AC2, SH Joe, comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, Roy, I've heard several news people say COVID-19 is the illness, maybe? I mean, I have the right term there, caused by this strain of coronavirus. Is that just something the news has latched onto? Is there any truth to that? And what exactly does that mean, if there is truth to what they're saying? Is the illness different from the virus? Is COVID-19 the illness caused by it, or is the virus actually called that? There's some confusion in what I'm hearing on the news.
Yeah, I sort of heard little bits of that. The only thing I can tell you is I think people are putting two and two together and coming up with 22. They sort of remember how AIDS was the disorder, but it was caused by HIV, the virus. So they're kind of doing it again with the nomenclature. The nomenclature has an interesting story in and of itself. Obviously, it became, at first, it was just the coronavirus, because they finally found some specimens. They looked under a electron micrograph, and it was the corona shape, and so they realized it was the coronavirus, and they did a genetic phenotype of it, and it was definitely a coronavirus. So it started off as the coronavirus. But that's way too general, because as we mentioned before, SARS and MERS and a lot of animal coronaviruses are also coronaviruses. So they started to call it the novel coronavirus, which is just another fancy way of saying the new coronavirus, which it doesn't really add anything to the mix. Then people started to call it the Wuhan coronavirus, because that's where the epicenter of the infection was originally. But the Chinese really didn't like getting any kind of part of their country. They didn't want what happened to the Spanish flu happen to them. They wanted it not to have anything to do with China. So they dragged the World Health Organization by the ear, and they suggested that they come up with something else that's more obtuse. And so they came out with COVID-19, which is supposedly short for coronavirus viral disease 2019. So the virus is COVID-19. The illness is COVID-19 infection. I don't think you need to make a distinction between the infection and the infector, personally. But, you know, that's subject to change and really depends upon what people want to do as a name usage. If everyone decides that they don't want to use COVID-19 as the name and they fall back to Wuhan coronavirus, then history books will fall with that.
Okay, real good. Thank you for that clarification. Also, is there any evidence that fish can carry a coronavirus? As I heard many weeks ago, the original outbreak happened at a fish factory. Was that just where it happened because of some other reason? Or is there any evidence that seafood or sea creatures can carry this EC2GSKC2SHO?
Well, most of the stories that I've heard, and take them all with a grain of salt, don't place it at a factory, place it at something called a wet market. The Chinese have marketplace. They have packaged foods like we do in supermarkets, but they have less expensive open markets that they call wet markets that have everything fresh and open and not sanitized and sitting around next to everything else. There's a lot of interesting, bizarre things that some Chinese people eat. You know, people get very upset when you tell a story that Chinese people have been known to eat dogs. Some of them do, but they refuse to admit that. But they eat snakes and bats and all kinds of weird things. So there was a story that it came from a bat. There was another story that it came from a snake. I don't think anyone really has any good idea what animal. There are a whole series of wild animals, reptiles, and mammals that are capable of carrying coronavirus type.
C2IS coming.
Bill.
Thank you, Roy. I'll leave you with a final thought. If you watch the... The Idiot Abroad is an interesting show, and the main character, Carl Pinkerton, goes to China. Might be worth watching if you like a good laugh. There's an excellent quote in there about where do they draw the line between animals and food or something like that. Real good, thank you. KC2SHO, I'll be listening. Thank you so much for all of this information.
Okay, you're welcome, John. This is, once again, AC2GS. Bill, I believe you are AC2IS. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, thanks. I've been doing a lot of looking into the news and the available information surrounding coronavirus or COVID-19, whatever we're calling it. One of the things I heard was that you know, the initial Chinese response was to sort of silence the doctor and whoever else was talking about it. But after that didn't work out, their next response was to, you know, figure out, oh, okay, this seems to be coming from this open-air market, as it was first described to us, right? It's an open-air market near a railroad station. And so they went there and they sort of sanitized/sterilized the whole place, meaning they killed all the animals there. I guess treated whatever people were there, closed the market. But that basically meant that there would be not a good way to trace this virus, not an easy way to trace this virus back to its actual source or whatever infected the human patient zero. I don't know if everybody's heard that. I thought that was semi-common story. AC Toyas.
Well, Bill, you also have to keep in mind the incubation period for this virus. And as one of my future stories is going to discuss, up in Washington, it's believed, looking at the genetic drift of the samples they were able to decode, that the virus was wandering about in Washington State for a good 6 weeks before anyone noticed. So chances are, if there was an animal in that wet market that was Agent Zero, that had been sold a month earlier. So I don't think that you would have gotten any significant information from them, you know, doing a good dissection of all these things. They did shut down the wet market. They did cordon off Wuhan. They cordoned off the entire province that Wuhan exists in. They've thrown a lot of things at it once they stopped hiding it. You know, authoritarian countries are not transparent. They called the doctor who started to warn people in and warned him that if he continued to do that, they would arrest him. But because he's a doctor, they just had him sign a little form that he wouldn't do this again. And he went back, and he was an ophthalmologist. He was a 35-year-old ophthalmologist. So can't say that he was terribly high risk per se, and yet he developed the coronavirus and he passed away, unfortunately, which annoyed the heck out of a lot of people, especially, I'm sure, his family. So authoritarian countries are capable of doing things that the democracies aren't, but if there's one thing they're really good at is hiding the truth, and they kind of do that as well as any type of government.
If I could, some other questions?
Sure.
Question, W2HO.
Hey, Howard recognized Bill said he had some questions. When Bill's done, I'll call on you, Howard.
All right, thank you. So it seems to me there are two critical numbers here, one being the reproduction rate of the virus and the other being the mortality rate. There seems to be, you know, questions about both. They're not very well known. The information about how long the coronavirus might last on a surface seems to just be sort of taken from influenza and assumed to be the same approximate 1 week at the outside kind of number. The reproduction rate of standard influenza is said to be 1.3, which makes it hit on average something like 8% of the population every year. The reproduction rate of COVID-19 is said to be somewhere between 2 and 3, so that's very significantly higher. If that's an accurate number, it seems like this might burn out with a reproduction rate that's that high, that it might not last more than a year or two on its own. The other thing was the mortality rate, which a bunch of people have said 2%, but there's also a lot of questions about mainly because we don't really know how many people are infected. There's probably lots and lots of undetected cases. So does that all sound relatively accurate up front, AC2IS?
The only thing I would adjust is it's not a reproductive rate. It's a contagion rate. In other words, how many, on average, how many people does each infected person pass the infection to? In the case, supposedly, of COVID-19, it's somewhere between 2 to 3. But that's presupposing that you already know everyone who has it, which we don't. So the higher the number of the infectious rate, the faster that it spreads. The other is the mortality rate, and as I mentioned, the World Health Organization had it at 2 for a while, brought it up to 3.4. There are some epidemiologists who think that when the dust finally settles, it'll be about 0.65. Generally speaking, the way people assume is that coronavirus is less infectious than influenza, but more dangerous to high-risk people. There's no reported cases of young children dying, as there are in influenza, although the percentage of young people dying of influenza is very low. It's only because we have so many cases of it that we see that in the science. So it might be that it's the same problem where it's equally low. As you get up into the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, and people with severe, significant health problems that impact their immune system, the mortality rate climbs.
Okay, I've heard you say just now that the COVID-19 is said to be less contagious than influenza. That doesn't seem to be the case, but maybe we just don't notice how quickly influenza spreads because it's so common. But I would think that this reproduction rate, which I think is the right term, also known as R-naught, R-zero, or R-naught, you know, if that reproduction rate, it's estimated to be between 2 and 3. So if it's 2, that means that each person who gets COVID-19 would tend, under quote-unquote normal circumstances, whatever normal is, would tend to infect 2 other people before that infection cleared. And somebody with influenza would tend to infect 1.3 other people before that infection cleared. So doesn't that tell you how contagious it is? How could we say then that COVID-19 with a reproduction rate of 2, which is much, at least 2, going by current estimates, which is much higher than 1.3, how can we say that COVID-19 would be less contagious, AC2IS?
Well, again, the problem is we know so little. The numbers are not very dependable. It just, you know, when you look around, I mean, again, millions of cases of influenza this year. It spreads all over the place. You know, when we finally are able to test for coronavirus the same way that we test for influenza, we may have to re-describe everything that goes on. And people are kind of changing numbers all over the place. I was very surprised when I heard that the World Health Organization had moved the mortality rate up from 2%. It's been 2% for a while. All of a sudden, about a week or so ago, they jumped it up to 3.4.
Sounds like you lost the repeater there.
Did I lose the repeater? I don't think so.
Okay, maybe the tail end of what you said just didn't come through on the Eastern repeater. I lost the tail end of your response. But So you're basically saying that you don't trust the reproduction rate to be what is claimed to be that 2 or 3. But I mean, it seems just from watching the news that these kinds of numbers are likely. You know, obviously we're not there to check things in person. I understand about the mortality rate. That could sort of deeply be in question, but I don't understand how there can be that much doubt about the reproduction rate, AC2IS.
Well, if you don't know how many people have subclinical versions of the virus, you don't know most of the people. The chances are, and some epidemiologists have just kind of pulled the number out of the sky, that they think that ultimately, if they do serology tests and what have you, they'll find out that the number of people involved in this mess is at least 10 times bigger than we thought they were, because a lot of them were subclinical. People were wandering around Washington State for 6 weeks before one of them decided to visit grandma in the nursing home and gave it to that floor. So that's why you can't really, unfortunately, depend upon them. These are the numbers that we have, so we have to deal with the numbers we have. But in the back of our heads, we kind of know that we're going to be tweaking and adjusting these things.
H22RY
is into it. So, yeah, we know that, you know, the travel was not shut down right away. There were early indications of problems in Wuhan before there was a lockdown. People with the means to do so basically fled the city to places that had hopefully better health care for the most part. And somehow, you know, some people with that virus made it to Washington before, I mean, other things brought it to Washington, like there were the two major things, right? There were flights, evacuations from directly from China, I believe, or possibly other places, and then there were flights from the quarantine cruise ships, right? One of those places was a hospital in California. One of those places was a hospital in Washington. But yeah, people seem to think that these patients, that the coronavirus did not sort of break quarantine in Washington, that somehow it came in another way. And so, yeah, okay, people who left Wuhan before lockdown managed to spread things indirectly through whatever other people to Washington in that time. That doesn't sound to me like an indication of a lower reproduction rate. Unfortunately, the stories surrounding the hospital in California make it sound a little bit more like in that situation the virus may have broken quarantine due to bad practices surrounding either the flights or something about the hospital there. Is there anything about that maybe that sounds wrong? But again, I don't see how any of this makes for a lower reproduction rate, AC2IS.
Well, Bill, I don't know what the final numbers are going to be when we learn about all the cases. In 2020 hindsight, we'll know exactly what the R naught is for this virus. We'll probably know all kinds of fun facts, like what conditions kill it and what conditions extend its life. That's one of the many things that these researchers are going to be working on along with the vaccine that they're working on, which is going to take at least a year and a half to pass all the human testing. And China is probably continuing with a test for an antiviral that they tried against Ebola and didn't work out, but didn't have any side effects, so they're testing it someplace in China. I haven't heard a word about how those are working out. So there's a lot more to be learned. The problem is these are the very early days with this infection. There's way too much stuff that we would love to know that we just don't know yet. You know, what would be good is when they get all the screening tests available and they start to both screen risk high-risk people and just the general population to see what the background infection of people who aren't particularly clinically apparent are.
AG2RY.
David, you recognize, you're right there after Howard W2HL.
Did you call me? I was out of the car, W2HL.
I was telling David where he is on the list of people that we're discussing this with. I was talking to Bill AC2 Wyatt. And any other points you wish to add, Bill?
Yeah, I know you were talking about testing before. As far as I know, nobody outside of the U.S. is using the tests that we're using here. South Korea, I think it is testing probably more people every day than we have tested so far in the United States. And yet we've got this guy, Azar, seemingly saying that we've got all the test kits that we could need. We've got Mike Pence telling us that we've got shortages of test kits. So it seems like we've got government sort of contradicting itself. Do we know really what the story is? Is there just some kind of bureaucratic issue that's keeping these tests from going out? We've heard, I think, many stories about doctors or hospitals sort of complaining that they are not able, or at least in the past, not able to get their patients tested when they wanted to get them tested. What's the story there? Why is it that we cannot test anywhere near the number of people that, say, South Korea is testing? AC2IS.
Well, Bill, the problem is, unfortunately, this is kind of a two-tiered problem. It's really a medical problem, but the powers that be are turning it into a political problem, and they're somewhat more motivated to calm people and maintain a decent stock market. So you're getting kind of parallel conversations going on, if not 3 or 4 or 12 or 18. Originally, what was the problem was that rather than the CDC allowing, or the Food and Drug Administration basically allowing third-party commercial companies to gear up and manufacture and distribute the tests, they decided to keep it within the CDC, which certainly limited their ability to produce these tests. And then they made an error in the reagent, and the tests were almost useless. So there was that problem. Recently, the Food and Drug Administration has kind of allowed the third-party commercial companies to design, manufacture, and ramp up. They thought that this was going to happen almost instantaneously, and they wanted to make everyone happy and go into the stock market, so they mentioned that we would have millions of tests by the end of this past year. We did. Towards the end of last week, they mentioned, forget the million, we'll have 75,000. Some journalists called around to find out how many actual tests were done, and they couldn't come up with more than 2,000. So the problems are that they're locked into the CDC as a very, very limited producer of these tests. There will be more that are coming online. If you listen to the politicians, by sometime in the middle of this coming week, there will be millions of tests available in the United States. I don't know if that's real or imaginary.
So it's possible. Very low on this, and it's just sort of run. You know, okay, the elderly are at risk, but it's a lower than what we expect. P2IS.
Okay, someone out there is playing with their transmitter. Please play with something else somewhere else. I didn't hear about half of what you said. If you want to repeat yourself, Bill?
I was sort of theorizing that, you know, since we have apparently so little ability to test right now, it's possible that, you know, this coronavirus has a much lower mortality rate than we think, and it's also just sort of rampant in the country right now and just going completely undetected. That would be sort of like a good, you know, a better version of reality than what we think we have going on right now, right? Because with such a low mortality rate, people would decide, from the very elderly and with very compromised immune systems, you would be much less likely to die than with the current reproduction rate and mortality rate that we think we have. Do you think that's possible? AC2IS.
Yes, Bill, I think it's possible. Whether it's likely or not, who knows, but it certainly is possible. There could be a lot of silent infection. It could have been covering the globe from 2 months ago, and all that we're seeing is the very tippy-top peak of the iceberg, and when the numbers get crunched, it may turn out that the mortality rate for this virus is less than influenza. It's possible. Unfortunately, there's no way other than a time machine to kind of know that earlier than after we've passed through this eye of a needle.
Another question. Let's see, it was swine flu that was in 2009, I think. Something like between 100,000 and 500,000 deaths worldwide as a result of that one, that I think originated in the United States. So that variant still seems to be responsible for about half the influenza cases in, I think, the United States and the world at this point. So if this coronavirus is really going around undetected like that, it sounds like then this COVID-19 variant is going to sort of take up a similar position alongside swine flu, right? Being responsible for some percentage of flu cases and deaths year after year going forward. That sounds like the way things are going. AC2IS.
Well, it certainly is possible. I mean, again, it depends upon other variabilities, its inherent genetic drift, its stability through seasons. What you're alluding to with swine flu is there are different classes of influenza. Swine flu belongs to a subclass called H1N1. 50% of infections of influenza that the CDC has tested for test for the H1N1 influenza type. It is not identically, genetically identical to the swine flu of 10 years ago. They are closely related, but they're not identical. Is it possible that this coronavirus will be something that's perpetually in the background, killing off some of our medically weakened population? Yeah, it's possible. Or it might just burn itself out the same way that MERS and SARS did. We're dealing with not quite as much information as we'd really like to have.
Well, let's see. H1N1 includes both swine flu of 2009, they referred to that as a pandemic at the time, as well as the 1918 Spanish flu. And I think it's right to say that the 2009 strain, or, you know, whatever variations of it, still account for about half of our flu cases, or maybe that's half of the influenza A cases. I thought that was correct information. I mean, the other end of the spectrum is if coronavirus really has a reproduction rate as high as 2 or 3, it seems like it's not going to burn out like SARS or Ebola or something like that. I mean, Ebola did simmer for quite a while in other places, but it just could not stand up to, you know, I don't know if you want to call it a healthcare system in the United States, but basically soap and water dealt with it pretty well. Maybe it would burn out more like the Spanish flu, you know, in 1 or 2 seasons. That was pretty dramatic, though, right? If I'm correct on this, I believe the Spanish flu took out something like 1% of the world's population. Again, with something with a reproduction rate that high, it seems like, okay, like with the 1918, it would go on for a year, maybe 2 years, and then sort of disappear because everybody who could be... Is that also, you know, a potential AC2IS?
Well, again, it depends upon a lot of factors that we aren't aware of. Viruses have something called genetic drift, in which the gene sequences change over generations. Some have a lot of drift, some have very little drift. Some of the drifts make it more dangerous. A lot of drifts make it less dangerous, and you just sort of don't know which one's going to slide up and down. The swine flu, although it's in the same category, the same virus type, influenza H1N1, is not identical to the Spanish flu. The H1N1 that we have now is not identical. One of the problems with a vaccination is you have to really be able to predict what variant of virus is going to be a major player, and develop specific antigen responses to those type of viruses. So you really don't know. And then there are other nuances. There's a problem with Ebola. Ebola was deadly enough and had a short enough span from infection to clinical presentation that it made things a little bit easier with being able to identify and cordon off the people. As you keep the period of time that it just sits there quietly subclinically, the more trouble it is to separate and isolate those people. So, you know, the big two numbers are the mortality rate and the infectious rate, but there are all kinds of other little details that play a part in how all these viruses will affect us in the short haul and the long haul.
Okay, so I mean, it sounds like what we're saying is that the unknowns outweigh the known information, and that there's just sort of very little we can say. I guess I wish it was here to know what's going on. AC2IS.
AC2GS. I would agree with you entirely, Bill. More information is always better than less. Hey, Howard, W2HL. I'm sorry it took this long. What did you want to say?
Well, I don't know if you touched on it because I've been in and out of the car, and good evening to everybody. I just wanted to just a comment and a question. They say that the way they're talking about this coronavirus sounds like it's very serious. It sounds like it's more serious than what they're telling us, because if they say, or if I heard, that the flu kills more people, how can that be true? Because they don't make such a big thing out of the flu, but they're making a big thing out of this. So this seems to be worse as far as mortality. How can they say that the flu kills more? They wouldn't make such a big deal out of it.
Okay, Howard. There's a lot of terms that get confused. The number of deaths attributed to coronavirus are much lower than the number of absolute deaths attributable to influenza this season. But the influenza season started way earlier than this coronavirus, and it was generally all over the world, so it was a community infection, as opposed to a original person giving it to two or three people who gave it to two or three people, etc. So you don't know how the coronavirus is going to escalate as it ages. Is it going to burn itself out and have a total number of deaths far less than influenza? Is it going to bloom and kill a lot more people? We don't know yet. So there's a difference between the mortality rate, knowing sadly how many people have the infection, and the total death rate that's dependent upon time as well.
Okay, I got you. All right, thank you. Thank you for the explanation. That makes sense. W2HO. And a good evening to everybody. And speak to you soon.
Okay, you're welcome, Howard. I'm glad if I could add a little bit of light to the darkness. Next on the list of people who wanted to say something, David, KG2RY.
QSL, Roy. Good evening. Good evening, everyone. In my mind, information, if there's too much of it, it clogs up a person's mind. You know, I've been listening to AM radio, listening to Christian radio, other kinds of radio. Whatever radio exists, I listen to it. The shortwave, you know, what they're saying about this thing in China and what they're doing. And then I thought, you know, one thing made a lot of sense to me, and I don't know if this is true. Maybe, Roy, you can talk about this. What we can do, you know, to stay healthy and to avoid either infection or any of the major symptoms. Maybe there's something we could do. Maybe there's something we can take or something that, you know, we can do to protect ourselves to a certain extent. Mike, back to you.
Well, David, unfortunately, it sounds rather trite and tired, because I'm sure you've heard many medical personnel say sort of the same thing. There's no magic bullet. There's no magic potion. There were hucksters out there selling silver solution, others telling you to gargle with bleach, God forbid. It's the common sense approach to things. A good night's sleep, as low a stressful life as you possibly can, 3 square meals a day, some moderate exercise, all the things that your mother or your grandmother would tell you should do to be a better person. Stay away from voluntary gatherings of large people. If you need to attend conferences or meetings because otherwise you'll get fired, I guess you're stuck. But don't do it when it's not necessary. Limit your exposure to large group of random people. Stay away from people coughing and sneezing. Masks, unfortunately, aren't terribly effective. The cloth or paper masks are somewhat effective in you not giving it to the next guy, but it doesn't really stop viral particles. Viral particles somewhat are stopped by using somewhat more esoteric masks, like an N95 mask. Those are in short supply, and